Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, February 27th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Mr. Reardon?
No, I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
Thank you. I apologize for my dramatic entrance.
Now, if you just sit there quietly, everything's going to be fine. So, my new friend and fellow therapist, Mandy Trout, returns for part two of our chat for this, the Sex Wisdom series. And what a joy it was to meet her last week. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 364, and presto. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
You think I'm too impulsive, don't you, Mr. Reardon?
No, I think you have a hearing problem. Mandy invites you to visit her on her site, newconnectionscounseling.com. And of course, she's on Facebook and Twitter, too. Look for these links in today's podcast posting on drdicksexadvice.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this series, Dr. Dick's Doc Room. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick's Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yes, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods. And you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why.
Thank you, Mr. Reardon. I appreciate this.
It's not just for you, dear. Thanks to the Dr. Dick Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Mandy, and thank you again for dropping by drdicksexadvice.com for this sex wisdom show. Had such a good time with you last week, and I know our audience is enjoying the conversation too. So let's pick up where we left off. We were talking about BDSM and kink at the end of last week's show, and just to keep on the edgier side of things, let's turn our attention to the topics of swinging and polyamory. So maybe we could start with somewhat of a definition. What differentiates the two, do you suppose?
Okay, well, so swinging is generally recreational sex. Mm-hmm. And typically you'll have like a primary couple, like you're in your primary relationship, and you decide to go to a club, or you decide to seek out a third or a fourth partner just to have fun sex for the night, you know, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And you may develop a relationship with that person, with that, or people, or not. And, you know, that sometimes, I mean, there have been experiences where people literally will have sex, they never see the people again, and that was just a one-time experience. Mm-hmm. Polyamory is a more of a long-lasting relationship, and, I mean, people, there's a more of a long-term committed bond, if you will.
Right.
You might have a couple that wants to move in with another couple and create an actual family system. Like, and then they have their own rules and agreements about who has sex with who, what are the relationship dynamics, you know, how are we going to structure this? And it's a long-term relationship.
Right.
Over, with various different rules and guidelines and such.
Right. So one is a relationship model, and another one is more of a way to be sexual in the world, I'm guessing.
Right. Now, there is an exception, because I've heard someone else describe polyamory as, if you're a swinger and you land up having many intimate relationships, and you land up having sex with the same people or persons over and over again, and you develop an intimate friendship with the same people that you're having sex with, then you're kind of polyamorous.
Yes.
I mean,
it's true.
Now you're talking about this area of gray that you're like, well, maybe I'm, you know, how do you define this now?
Right.
Because you're kind of having a friendship, or you're having the same sexual partners
over
the long haul too, even if you're not moving in together.
Right.
You know, so it starts to. Depends which one you ascribe to more,
right,
I guess.
Right, exactly. So there are these two relationship models, mm-hmm. polyamory and swinging. Mm-hmm. But are they all that different from sexual exclusivity and monogamy? I kind of think not, but I'm going to let you weigh in on that. The reason that I ask you this is that one of my most recent guests, in fact, we talked about her last week. Bendy Yoga Girl said something very, very interesting to me in our interview. She said, everything that she knows about poly, she learned in monogamy. And I thought that was extraordinarily insightful.
Well, and so when I was at Bendy's workshop, I think what she was saying was a lot of her concepts come from a kind of a heterosexist view.
Ah.
And she was talking about submission and dominance, and like in some ways, you could almost, I mean, although this is not true and there's a variation, you can, in a lot of times, submission or submissives are women and dominant personalities are males.
Yes.
And so she was kind of looking at it from that perspective.
Yes.
And it was kind of interesting to look at that, because then we also know that there's so much variation, and now with gender variance, you can't put anyone in a box.
Right.
So it's, and then of course, there's, you have to look at the whole picture, and it gets pretty complex sometimes.
Absolutely. So without putting you on the spot, are you self-identifying as polyamorous and or a swinger?
So this is where it's confusing, because, I mean, I'm a swinger, but if I use that one school of thought, I'm also polyamorous.
Yes, it's true. It's true.
I do have friendships. I mean, I wrote something recently. I do a lot of writing. I journal mm-hmm. about my experiences. And the one thing I said is I'm in my life today, I go to a dinner, and after, I mean, just sitting at a dinner, I'm able to have an experience where I'm intimately just talking to someone across the table. I feel like I've connected with them on such a deep level in a way that I've never felt in my life before.
Yes.
It's like, my gosh, you know, when, you know, what might take a person 2 or 3 years to know about someone, I might feel that level of connection within the first two nights of seeing them.
Right.
Or even one night, you know, seeing them, just because it's an intimacy thing.
Right. And, you know, and I'm a firm believer that there's an amount of intimacy that can be had over a dinner table that supersedes any kind of intimacy that a person could have in the bedroom. And in fact, when I see some clients who are having problems in their relationship, particularly in terms of fidelity, and that's such a loaded word that I always have my clients explain what they mean to me, and oftentimes it's the woman who is the offended party, so to speak, and she says, well, you know, it's my husband who cheated on me. And I said, cheated on you? I said, well, what does that mean exactly? And she looks at me and she goes, well, what do you mean? You should know what cheating means. And I said, well, let me ask you this. I said, what if I told you that your husband was having these intimate luncheons with, you know, a coworker or some other person, and there's no touching, there's no sex, there's no nothing, but they have discovered that they are soulmates. What would be more threatening to you, this connection over a, you know, a lunch table, or, you know, what might happen in the bedroom for a zipless fuck? And inevitably, it's the intimacy that is the concern. And so fidelity is not a genital issue, at least not from my point of view.
That's true. I want to go back a little bit to what you're saying, and then you reminded me of something else. Because you were saying, is it the same as monogamy? And I don't think it's the same as monogamy. I mean, I think when you're, firstly, the way I see it is, like, I think most often than not, you have a primary relationship, which is the central relationship.
Right.
And then you have sex partners that are, like, secondary.
Yes.
And this is, I'm thinking of this in the swingers model for a second. You have sex partners, and it's based, you know, every partner you have a different experience with. And some of it is just strictly physical, some of it is emotional, some
right.
of it is like you have a friendship, sometimes you don't. It's completely, your relationships and the qualities of your relationships are going to be different. Now, the central couple is always going to have the you know, the grunt of what you're connected to. You're connected on many, many levels with your central partner, but not necessarily with all these other partners.
Right.
And then with polyamory, it's a little bit different because maybe you do, you have a long-term relationship with other people, but you also associate with those other people on many, many different levels.
Right.
You know, and one thing I think people need to understand is when you lose a partner in a polyamorous relationship, you can't replace that partner.
Yes.
You may say, oh, I have another one. No.
It's so true what you say.
It's like you just lost someone you love. And it doesn't matter that you have your primary wife sitting next to you or whatever. Mm-hmm. You just lost someone you love, even if it's a girlfriend or a tertiary, tertiary would be the third in line partner. It's someone that you really care about, that you associated with in a specific way.
Right.
And now that person's not there anymore.
So do you think that polyamory is getting... it seems to be in the news a lot lately, and not always in the best light, but it seems to be fashionable, and it seems to be, interesting and stuff like that in the popular culture. Do you suppose that's helping or hurting how people appreciate polyamory?
You know, I think it's really hard. Until I was in the community, there was no way that someone could talk to me about this and I could understand them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like trying to say, this is an apple when I have no concept what an apple is.
Right.
Even if I know the words and all the things that you're saying, you know, I have no idea what this really means. So how am I supposed to, like, it comes back to, what you were talking about with another guest about 50 Shades of Grey. How is a person from living a monogamy kind of a life recognizing or even relating to 50 Shades of Grey?
Mm-hmm.
That's still a question I have.
Yes.
Because I know people that love the idea that, wow, we're opening this up so that people are aware of this new kind of lifestyle and it's bringing it out into the open. But how then are the people that have never actually been introduced to these concepts, how are they relating to these concepts?
Right. Well, you know, I sense that, you know, a lot of people have fantasy lives that include lots of things that would be prohibited in their sexual exclusive lives with their partner. And so, I mean, that's a beautiful part about humans, is we have this great capacity, you know, to compartmentalize that, you know, this I understand is fantasy and that I can revel in it and enjoy it and all this kind of stuff over here. But over here, I have restrictions and, you know, and it's exclusive and all that kind of stuff. And I know the difference. So, I think that, you know, a lot of people also have a sense of having loved different people at different times in their lives. Sometimes, you know, their primary partner dies and they go on to form another relationship with other people. So that's what we call serial monogamy. But, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I understand and I'm capable of understanding the notion of loving different people and more than one person at a time.
So and the difference now with when you're talking about polyamory, for instance, is that you're choosing, you're consenting to loving many people at once.
Yes, exactly that. And so that's the self-identification that you're able to say, not only is this, you know, a concept, but I'm actually going to live it out.
Right. Which brings me to a concept that I thought everyone knew this word, but apparently not so, even in the lifestyle, which we call, when we call, talk about swingers, we talk about the swinging lifestyle.
Yes.
Is the word compersion.
I don't know that.
You don't know that word.
No, so tell me.
So compersion is literally, let me paint the scenario, then you'll understand
okay.
the definition.
Cool.
If you and your partner are playing with another, say your partner is playing with another partner,
mm-hmm.
but you decide to sit out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting out and you're seeing absolute enjoyment from your partner at, you know, playing with this other person. You are filled with this absolute joy of, oh my gosh, my partner is in absolute bliss. I love seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
You are now, you're being compersionistic towards your partner.
No kidding. That's beautiful. I love it.
So it's literally this idea that you're feeling joy at seeing someone else's pleasure
right.
and, that you love.
So that's easily translatable to other areas of our lives. I mean, let's say that, you know, your partner really enjoys watching football, but you don't. And you can let him or her watch the football, and you can see that they're having a great deal of joy, but you don't have to participate in it at the same time.
And at the same time, you can appreciate their, you can appreciate it of enjoyment.
And interestingly enough, we allow people all that leverage and all that latitude. But when it comes to sexuality, somehow we shut it all down. I mean, it seems really strange because, you know, we are capable of much more than I think we give ourselves credit for.
Well, and unfortunately, that comes from a very sex-negative culture.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And you know, I have to bring, I don't know, have you ever heard of the movie Hysteria?
Yes.
I just watched it. And, gosh, it's talking about the whole 1850s and
yes.
And the way women were viewed, you know, during that time period.
Yes.
And it's just and basically women were kind of diagnosed with hysteria, which was, you know, like if you were causing trouble, you know, for people that don't know, if you were, you know, I mean, your typical feminist would have hysteria.
Absolutely, absolutely.
and
anything that was challenging the societal norms.
Yeah. So. And then they would literally fill you up, and that was the treatment.
Yes.
We called it something else.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about coming out as poly or kinky, whatever, gay, whatever. Any advice for those who are taking their first tentative steps out of any particular closet?
Well, The things that I would want people to know is that you're not alone, that there are other people that have gone through this, and it is a hard process,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just know that that you have a community of people that know what you're feeling or what you're going through. And from the family's point of view, that there's also support, because there's PFLAG, did I say that right?
Yeah, PFLAG, right.
PFLAG, which is, basically, they provide resources for families, support groups, all this stuff, because they know how difficult it is sometimes for families hearing about their adolescents or their, you know, adult children coming out.
Right.
So, and the thing is, I mean, I'm thinking about how sometimes people that really love you just have a hard time grasping this concept of accepting what you're saying when you say I'm gay or any number of
right, or I'm poly, or I'm kinky, or anything else. You know, I mean, it's difficult because their frame of reference maybe very shallow or non-existent even, and like kinky, well, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
You know, we talked a little bit about that last week, and it's true. I mean, it's a frame of reference, and it's contextual, and if we don't have that, then, and sometimes we're actually talking about using language that the other person is unfamiliar with, and so sometimes we're at cross purposes in this coming out process.
Yes, absolutely. Can I read you something? Because I actually
wrote
a blog about this, and then I got a reply, which I thought was so beautiful and so courageous. It was about a parent who said that she was having a hard time with her son coming out, and she was open enough to write about her experience. So I was talking about letting go of shame and you know, finding a family of choice if you didn't have the support of your family. And she said, This is a good blog. My son recently came out to me and my husband, and although I like to say that I'm handling it well, it's been really hard for me. I want to be honest. I truly do believe in kindness, compassion, and equal rights for people, but I'm struggling with this. Perhaps it's my own impetus towards growth taking place. I suppose if I could sum it up best, I would say that I'm mourning the loss of what could have been. When you have a child, you're aware of all their possibilities. There are no closed doors, and although I suppose that's not realistic nor rational, hearing that some doors are closed is hard. And then she goes on to talk about it. Regardless of your parents' acceptance of your sexuality, you can always be assured that the love is still there. There's no way for it to go. It's a part of them. The world is changing, and so are we. The change is hard. I hope this helps a bit, you know, to understand her position.
Right. It's curious to me, you know, when ostensibly straight people struggle with the gay identity of somebody that they love, and they express themselves as eloquently as that woman does. Mm-hmm. But they say things like, you know, doors are closed when somebody comes out as gay. Well, the same is true is for somebody who doesn't even consider gay. You know, I'm straight, okay? Well, then all the gay doors are closed. So, you know, it's a curiosity, you know, and it's clearly a mindset of the dominant culture that, you know, this is a variant, and, you know, you're shutting yourself off from a bunch of things. My answer is well, so are you.
Well, and I mean, that's true, because your kids may not have the same ideas or, you know, that you do as a parent for what their life is going to be like.
Exactly. And, you know, now that there's marriage and you can adopt and, you know, I mean, you know, you can get a dog and a picket fence and a ring and, you know, you look just like mom and dad. There you have it.
And yet, you know, I actually wrote to her personally, you know, when she wrote this, and she didn't expect it, actually. She thought it was really nice that I did. But, you know, I said I appreciated her courage for writing it. And it is hard, and, you know, because I think, again, people's feelings are people's feelings, and I appreciate that they can be honest about where they are. Sure. And even if it's coming from a place of anger or prejudice or whatever, that's their feelings, and to be able to say, this is where I am right now, and I'm trying to see something different.
Right,
that
right.
means more to me than someone just being too proud to admit that they're wrong
or that's true.
You know, any number of other things.
That's so true. And in terms of, you know, like even vocabulary, I mentioned this just moments ago, sometimes, you know, people have real pejorative vocabulary for the things that they're frightened of or don't understand, and it's incumbent upon us, you know, the people who are part of the communities that are less understood or appreciated, to own some of the really derogatory terms that our culture uses. You know, like I'm sure that you're aware that there's a lot of people in the popular culture who think that swingers and or polyamorous people are sluts. and that's a terrible derogatory term. And yet people like the author of The Ethical Slut has used that as a way of owning that word. The same is true with fag or bitch or cunt, you know, all of those things, right?
Well, and I'm so glad you brought that up because I really want, I actually want to write an article on this. I am so passionate about reclaiming words. And I actually started reading other people's blogs about this. And other people feel like, what's the point of reclaiming words? Aren't we just, you know, making, aren't we, it's almost, they almost feel shamed by the fact that we have to reclaim bad words. And I didn't quite understand that. I'm reading about like this new slut walk, you know.
Right.
And well, like, why should we call ourselves sluts? What is this helping? I don't understand. And I have a completely different take on the whole thing because words, we put meaning on words.
Yes.
And when we can take the power, the negative power out of the word and say this, I own this, and now it's a positive thing for me, it loses its negative power. It no longer has power over us. And, you know, when I say, I'm a slut, and I have other partners, and this is my choice.
Mm-hmm.
If this is what the definition of slut is, this is my choice.
Then I'm happy to own it. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now I can, you know, and then I add things like I'm confident, I'm vibrant. When people see me, they see me in my element. Right. I stand up tall. I have a voice. All of a sudden, I am powerful. And you know what? If someone were to come over in a negative way and say, "Oh, you're such a slut," I say, "Okay, so what?"
That's right.
I don't care.
That's right.
And you know what? You're right. I am.
And on top of that, I'm all these other things. You know, I'm a confident slut. I'm, you know, an ethical slut. I'm a funny slut. I'm, you know, educated slut. I'm, you know, a white slut. You know, all of these things. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, I own fag. I mean, I use it all the time now to describe myself and, you know, homo and all that kind of stuff. It really takes the sting out. So now if somebody hurls that that insult at me, it doesn't hurt because I've desensitized that word for myself. And that's a part of it. We talked just moments ago about coming out, and I think that's part of coming out is, you know, getting rid of these words that hurt us. And we're never going to be able to stop people from hurling the word, but we can defend ourselves by inoculating ourselves against its hurtfulness.
That's true. I think it's how we individually relate to the word, not how
right.
We're changing the masses.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly that. So there you go.
And there's another book. It's actually called Cunt, and it's about reclaiming the word cunt.
Yes,
I love that book.
It's absolutely. I totally agree.
And again, it's the same night, the same as Ethical Slut, which was one of the first books that I read, which
right.
totally changed my perspective on things.
Well, again, I'm looking at my clock, and I see that our time is up again for today. I had, like, pages and pages of more questions. Is there a chance that you could answer just two quickly questions before our time is up? Who are your inspirations? Who inspires you? And who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Well, as I mentioned, Tristan Termino.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
Do lots of books. And then, you know, you mentioned Dossie Eastern, and I love her writing. I love what her perspective, I have to say, is she must be another sexual hero of mine.
Yes.
You know, and then, you know, I have just met so many wonderful people in my local community, people that I really regard. And I'm thinking of people like Kristen Napik. I'm thinking of people like Elena Gaposch, you know, people that have really come out and just been
right.
so supportive.
Right.
And the one thing Alina said that I actually wrote down, she said, enlist the support of your community in one of her speeches. And I love that because,
right.
I believe in community and I believe in support.
Right.
So,
right.
And so those are the people that are really kind of influencing me, you know, and then, you know, in this area of the world.
Yes. Good, good, good. Yes, we are so fortunate to have such remarkable role models in our community. And Kristen and Elena have both been guests on my show, and they're remarkable women. And you know, we have this wonderful, vibrant, poly and kinky community here in Seattle that you know, I'm so proud to be a part of. Before we go, would you give us your website address again? Walk us around. Let us know what we can find there, and can we contact you through your site?
Yes. You, well, okay. So my site is newconnectionscounseling.com, and you can contact me through counselor@newconnectionscounseling.com. I'm also on FetLife.
Oh, good, good, good. You're also on Facebook.
Right, and that's the facebook.com, and then it's /newconnectionscounseling.
Very cool.
Yeah, so, and I'm, you know, definitely, I have a blog, so I post all my blogs on my Facebook page, and you can access it through my website directly under my blog. And I write personal blogs, but I also, like I said, post other people's articles too, and updates and things like that.
Outstanding. Well, we'll have lots and lots of stuff to read. Thank you so much for all of your precious time. I appreciate it. We're the richer for the experience. And I'm hoping that there's going to be an opportunity, even though we basically live in the same town together, we have yet to meet.
Yes, I will. We'll find a way to meet. All right. I'll make it happen.
Good, good, good. Well, be well, my dear, and we will be chatting again soon. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Bye. What a delightful show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this same time for an interview with a very special guest who will be here as part of the Sex Education series, don't you know? And more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
There's some cookies on the table.
Well, that's good because I'm almost done here. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you just better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life.
Where'd you learn that?
Oh, you do not want to know. But wait, you're not sure what to buy? Take a look at the sex toy review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site, and remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these shows. How great is that? Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.